Hello, everyone. Welcome to this live stream. You are here with Chris and Evie. Whoops, Evie, there you are.
Hi.
And here's all of us at once. So welcome to this live stream. We have a lot of things we want to talk about today, and two big things. We're going to be talking about the drug shortages, and I think Evie is going to be sharing as much as you feel comfortable sharing about your process,
story. Sure.
Your story, what you've
sure.
gone through
it's
in all
time.
Of this. Is it?
I think so.
You sure?
Sure.
Okay. All right. And as well, we're going to be potentially, when we get time, we'll talk about, the John Durham report. So this is a really big deal. If we have time, we'll get to it. But this is one of the most egregious lapses, abuses of power that have happened in my entire lifetime. And I grew up during Watergate. So that happened during while I was alive. So it's pretty bad. So how would you like to start here today, Evie?
How would I like to start?
Yeah.
I mean, we can go through whatever you'd like to about this and then I can talk about it, or I can share my story first.
Well, let's...
You want to give a little background?
Let's do a little background.
That seems like a good plan.
Okay. So, first up, this is just very current data. This is in Bloomberg. It was just in yesterday's newspaper, and that there is currently a shortage of more than 300 drugs in the United States right now. So every one of those represents a pain in somebody's butt, right? So we've heard about all the ones for ADHD, right? Mm-hmm. There's like Ritalin shortages. But there's also cancer drug shortages. There's also opiate shortages for people who are in pain med, things like that. So it's actually there's a lot. And notice here too, let me get my little quick drawing tool out here. I'll get the pen. No, highlighter. I like my highlighter. Yeah. So if we see here, this is more than 300 right here. Like even in the height of the COVID supply shortages, which we had a lot of there, right? Because, you know, ships weren't coming and planes weren't flying,
right.
And, yep. You know, precursors weren't being delivered. This is as bad as it's been in quite a while, since 2014. So it's been about a decade, and we had shortages then too. But these are for all sorts of reasons. A lot
Yikes.
Of shortages.
I can feel my like blood pressure go up looking at that
Why
chart.
Is that?
Well, shall I just dive right into it? You got more.
Just a little more. All right. So that's just sort of at a high level. There's some shortages. This is from May 18th. Drug shortages, they're causing issues right now. They say in some instances, access to the active ingredient for the drug may be in short supply. So there's a raw material issue. There may be manufacturing delays. And down at the bottom, they said, you know, the worst nightmare would be to have a patient show up, not have drugs available. Which is yet to happen at university hospitals, but has happened in other places, mm-hmm. right? And I know you've had personal experience with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
It just happens now. And if worse came to worse, the doctors and pharmacists would have to decide who would get treatment and who would not. So triage, rationing, they haven't gotten there yet, but, you know, you can sort of see it coming.
Yeah.
Right? And then I did just want to set it up and talk about, like, two particular classes of them, because, you know, we've talked about this quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Which is that should there be some sort of a commotion in the world, something that interrupts supply chains, something mm-hmm. that would cause ships and planes not to fly, because as you know, we have this global just-in-time manufacturing supply system.
Mm-hmm.
So precursor chemicals might be made, say around Wuhan, China, which is a place they do a lot of that sort of manufacturing. And then those precursor chemicals, the APIs, would go over maybe to India and get manufactured into actual tablets and then shipped here.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that disrupts that whole larger flow, say war, disease, pandemics, could disrupt the whole thing. And then the question is, well, you know, we would just start manufacturing them here, but it's not that easy. And trying to get something done in the United States regulatorily is impossible. The government, it's terrible. It's terrible. You know, could we move fast if we had to? No, absolutely not. There are rules to be followed
mm-hmm.
and things like that. So there's two types I want to talk about in particular here. One is, these are the benzodiazepines. Okay. A lot of people are on these.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I gave you so much more data than you ever wanted about these drugs.
It's true. So it's true. We'll talk about
it. We'll talk about it in a minute.
This is the basic benzodiazepine core ring structure here. You'll see it repeated as a motif across all of these. And then there's little side groups, and those side groups make them different things, right? And so Xanax is actually called alprazolam.
Alprazolam.
God, I'm mumbled mouth today. Chlorodiazepine epoxide here. You got your plain old diazepam here, which is Valium. That's what everybody knows about. Mommy's little helper, right? Ativan here, lorazepam, and et cetera, Klonopin and all those. So, but the thing is that even though they look similar, they have very, very different half-lives. Mm-hmm. Some are much more potent. Some of these are 10, 20, 40 times more potent than other ones.
Mm-hmm.
They last longer. But these basically mess up your, they come into your nervous system and they bind with your GABA receptors, which are all over your body, right?
Mm-hmm. And your brain and your gut.
Brain, gut, everywhere. And so the GABA, when the GABA channel is activated, it's like it pushes on the brake pedal in your body system, right? So it pushes the brake. And then the glutamate is the other type of channel receptor, and that's the gas pedal. So your body has a very tightly regulated thing between pressing gas pedal, pressing brakes. So it has to do both those things, right? And that's very normal. So what happens when over the long term, though, on a chronic basis, you take your gas pedal, sort of detune it, and you just start pressing on the brake over and over. That's what a benzo does. Just presses mm-hmm. the brake, presses the brake, presses the brake, right? Well, over time, your body says, hey, dude, I got to get up and go too. So it begins manufacturing more gas pedals,
mm-hmm.
right? And then your whole body gets out of regulation because nerve cells are these big, long things. Like if my cell body, if my body was a neuronal cell body and I'm in the spinal cord, but I'm actually receiving sensory input from, say, the big toe, that is so far in cell terms. That would be as if I had a tendril that reached out all the way to California,
mm-hmm.
right? All the way out there. And so guess what? If I have to do something way out there in California, like put more gas pedals out there, because I have too many brake pedals going on, I have to package this little thing up. I got to put it on a really slow boxcar, gets out there. And then later when I find out, because somebody says, oh, I want to get off of these gas, the brakes, right? I want to get off of these benzos. You can't just stop them. It's one of the worst drugs out there because, well, you know more than this. What happens?
Of course you can just stop them. You stop them. You know, first you do a quarter, excuse me, of your dose, and then you do another quarter, and then you just keep going. It takes you, what, 4 weeks? It's easy.
All right, she's being sarcastic.
I am. Oh, my God, this is...
This is what Jordan Peterson had to try almost... Okay, what's the story?
Okay. All my stuff's falling off. I'm just knocking things around here. This gets me very excited. Now, honestly, I mean, this is my personal story that I haven't talked very much, if at all, about here in the public sphere, but I'm going on a couple of years now, I think, of coming off of a drug in that family that I was given many, many years ago for some extreme anxiety. And who knows if that's what it was, if it was thyroid or something else. I guess we'll never know.
Mm-hmm.
My stepfather had passed away. I'd gone through some rough times, and I'd been given this sort of as a last resort. I tried other things, but I also didn't have a lot of resources back then and extra money to go and try all sorts of things. And, you know, as a single mom by myself, like trying to do a lot of things on my own. And so I started taking this drug, not really understanding how much it affects your whole body system, how quickly your body actually becomes really acclimated to it, and you can't stop it abruptly. And so I wasn't told anything at that initial visit about, you know, how long it would take before my body couldn't stop it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't told about any of the other sort of long-term effects of taking it. You know, I was just sort of handed this thing, and I was so desperate for relief and help that I just sort of took it. And I was grateful to finally be able to sleep or something like that,
mm-hmm.
not have these awful panic attacks. And so, because I'd lost a lot of weight and I was really not doing well. But if I could go back and talk to that former self now, I've paid for that. It's like, it's just like a credit card, you know, whatever we put on our emotional credit card at some point in life, I do believe we have to pay that back.
Mm-hmm.
What I put on an emotional credit card to be able to have relief then, I'm paying for in spades now.
Yeah.
So for the past 2 years, Chris has been helping me. We've been tapering me, titrating me very carefully off of it. It has been a nightmare, to say the least. And that's just my opinion from having been first person in that nightmare. But I know it's been hard for you too, as a caretaker in some sense sometimes. And it scrambles your brain. It messes with your temperature regulation. I can't remember things. I can't say things. Words won't come out right. Thoughts are unable to be processed. My memory is terrible. Short-term memory is awful. Long-term memory is not much better. I mean, just very basic things that you kind of take for granted.
Well, and this is something that it wasn't at all uncommon. You showed up with some anxiety,
mm-hmm.
some caregiver, and I'm using this word fairly loosely,
mm-hmm.
said, here, take some pills, right? And then, like, now the benzos, they have a black box warning on them from the FDA, because 20, 30, 40 years after, like, we should have known this, the FDA finally caught up, you know, and realized that I think benzos have an incredible, important use for, like, a day, max a week, right? If somebody's gas pedals are just flaring away and they have a legit full-on panic attack, hey, you know, tap the brakes, right?
Yeah.
But you were put on them for years. Nobody said anything.
12.
Did you ever have a doctor, like, A, you know, inform consent on the front end, tell you, you know, what you were up for, or B, later on, start to talk to you about weaning off of them? Or, I mean, at any point?
No, I mean, no. That's what was really shocking about it. And then it was around the time of the pandemic. We were talking about sort of shifting things around for some other sets of reasons. And I thought every time I managed to not take it, it was a victory. But when in actuality, every time I didn't take a dose, I was giving my body, like, just such total stress, right? Up and down, mm-hmm. and all around. It was awful.
Yeah.
So, no, sadly, what ended up happening was that we've had to really talk with the care provider I'm working with and, you know, share as much as we know from our research about it, because he certainly did not understand at the outset. You couldn't just walk down off of this in a month, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, a few weeks, you should be good. And then when it took me much longer, he's like, what's wrong with you? And then it started to get, like, pretty intense for me, where I didn't feel heard. I felt gaslit, probably very similar to a lot of what people have gone through around the most recent medical treatments, right?
Well, I think it was a big education for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Myself, I had to learn a lot. I was like, oh, I didn't even know. I had no idea, you know, until I dove into it. And then you showed me the website, the Benzo Buddies, right? Where it's just like hundreds of thousands of, like, forum posts of people.
Oh, millions.
Yeah. And it's a whole bell curve of things, right? Some people get off them relatively easy, all things considered. Other people, years. It's a years long process,
mm-hmm.
that even long after they've completely stopped, they have the echoes, and it's brutal, brutal, right? So it was a whole long education process for your doctor, for us, for all of that. Mm-hmm. I'm way more sensitive to it now. And of course, this fits in with all the COVID stuff that's been happening, because boy, could I lose more faith in our big major institutions? I don't know how, but it's, you know, it's, this was a real eye opener to discover that, that the system wasn't even all that interested in these stories. So the absolute best, this is what I found, because I went to all these different sites, right? If you go to Google, which is just like a complete crap show of, like, advertisements and whatever.
Oh, you know what they give you? Advertisements for going to, like, a detox facility, which I had been given it as a prescription, and I'd only ever taken it that way, as prescribed, right?
As prescribed. So sure, but...
But they gaslight you that way, too, when you're trying to find out what's going on with these meds or what are their side effects when you start to come off. you're searching just for data, and all you get are all these like shoveled into this specific group of people. Like, oh, you're an addict. That's what's wrong with
you. Or
you
have a dependency, right?
Right.
A physical dependency. So benzos create a very rapid physical dependency.
Oh, they do.
I'm seeing over here, I'm looking at all the comments right now, and I see a lot of people weighing in saying, been there, done that, or going through it right now. I mean, it's a big deal. So
that's right. Only two things in this world can kill you if you quit cold turkey, Clear Mind says. Alcohol and benzos, it's not worth it. Talk through your problems.
Yeah, and Dead Man Walking saying, I had brain zaps coming off of SSRIs, antidepressants for over 6 months.
Yes.
And Jordan Peterson, Aaron Steck says, was on benzos, mm-hmm. became very sick. Not just very sick. He almost died. Mm-hmm. He had to be put into a medically induced coma. I think he went to Russia.
Yeah.
9 days in a medically induced coma because he had this akathisia, which is a inability to control body motion. He hadn't slept for 3 weeks, which is about, that's where lethality kicks in. If you keep somebody awake for 3 weeks, that's where they tend to start dying, mm-hmm. right? So he was at the edge of things and had to go. It was very serious. Now, he had been put on, same thing, like had a temporary thing.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody put him on. Doctor never took him off, didn't warn him, right? How did doctors not know about this or care enough?
Same way they didn't read the package insert on what.
That's why you've got to do your own research. Because once you do, you find out very quickly, you will know more than the average doctor about most things. And that pisses them off, ego and all that other stuff.
It makes it worse. Yeah. It's very hard to go in there and advocate for yourself, especially if you're not feeling well.
Ooh,
because you're going through this already.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I have Dr. Martinson helping me, which was huge. And the times that I had to go by myself, I was terrified. But I feel for everybody out there that's already dealing with this. And I started preemptively getting off of this stuff, A, because I don't feel like I really need to be on that anymore. My life is in a stable, happy place. And for me, it was just sort of the last vestiges of an older era,
mm-hmm.
Where I didn't need that kind of support anymore. However, I mean, it was very challenging to sort of start that process and see how long it would actually take. So if it is something that anybody that's on here, this is not medical advice, but if it is something that anyone listening is considering, definitely, you know, think about what it is, do some research, find out if it's something that takes a long while and give yourself that space.
Absolutely. If you're on any of these things, the strongest advice I would have is get off them as fast as you know how.
Well, careful.
That...
it's like a brain injury, like a traumatic brain injury, wasn't it? What happened to me?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it creates this excitotoxicity because again, the brake and the gas pedal have to be very finely regulated. If you just pull one away, you can overexcite. That's excitotoxicity.
It's right.
The neurons just fire too much. So you have auditory hallucinations, sensations that aren't true or real or overamplified. Noises are too loud. Colors are too bright. All stimulus becomes an overwhelm because, again, you have all these gas pedals just amplifying everything.
Right.
But if you do that too much, nerve cells are very delicate. The neuronal research was my research back in the day, right, for my PhD. If you overexcite them, excitotoxicity is a big deal. That's how a lot of poisons work. And so in this case, it's the removal of something that creates that excitotoxic condition that's mm-hmm. it. It's the brain zaps, the akathisia, the restlessness, the inability to tune things down. You can't. I didn't say just stop them, because when I say get off, I'm saying that this is gonna be upwards of, you know, for some people it's gonna take 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Very careful titrating, very careful. So we had to go into a whole very complicated titration process where it's not just like cut a pill in half. Mm-mm-mm-mm. This is taking it down by a measured percentage very carefully, and then once symptoms start arising, holding steady for weeks or months, depending, mm-hmm. and then carrying on. It's a mm-hmm. it's a whole thing, but there are formulas out there that
sure.
people have.
And you're not going to feel good during it. You're going to get to like, how bad can you be that you can tolerate?
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically where we were hovering at the whole time.
Yep.
I had horrible tinnitus. I just,
Liquid Electrum says my brain took years to rewire, right?
I feel so bad hearing about this. It's so hard. The worst part too is that when you go in there and say, oh my gosh, I'm having a problem with this, they either tell you not to do it or they put you back to a higher dose. Because mm-hmm. a lot of times, if you start to go off of one of these drugs in the benzodiazepine family too, your body doesn't like to wobble around with doses. So if you start to go down and then you go back up
No,
and you
never go up.
reinstate, it's so
No,
bad for your
you
system.
can't go up
It
again.
gets like exponentially harder the next time you want to come off of it. But anyway, so yeah, this was our personal experience. And thankfully, I was really grateful that Jordan Peterson had the courage to tell his story, or his daughter. Remember that one where he spoke about it? Because if he hadn't, I was really struggling at that point. I hadn't found that website, benzobuddies.org. I had only been told what I had been told by my care providers. You didn't have a lot of experience with this particular set of drugs. And what we could find out there in Google was not accurate. Like, we had to go to DuckDuckGo and other alternative search engines just to find out what was real, not what the pharmaceutical companies wanted us to believe, right? So it just, thankfully, I heard a story because I was terrified, and something in my body was like, look, I have to take this slow. I know me, know my system. I'm very sensitive. You know, anything like dramatic is probably going to be intense. And I wasn't wrong about that. But yeah, wean off carefully. And the reason I did do it, and I'm grateful I did, is because I was aware that if I stopped that one abruptly, it could kill me. And that scared me. I was like, you know what? Why am I on this anyway? You know, it was COVID and like looking ahead at the shortages we thought we might see anyway. And but
Well, so I think the larger message here too, though, is that because we don't know how the future is going to unfold, and you know, my position is that hey, things could sort of break at any moment. What does break mean? Well, our whole supply chains could really break down at some point, right? Who knows? Who knows what could happen due to war, due to cyber this, due to whatever the story is, right? And so I just have this confidence that that there will be those disruptions. So to the extent that people, this the, one thing you don't want is you absolutely don't want to ever find yourself in a position where you're dependent, okay? I'm not using the word addiction. Addiction's a separate word, but your body is physically dependent to have those brake pedals being applied, and you can't just remove them without risk. Depending on how long you've been on them and the dose, it could not just be a risk, it could be death, right? And a very unpleasant one. So that's part one of the story. Part two is, though, that our wonderful, caring, beautiful healthcare system here in the United States has decided to really clamp down on what they call controlled substances. So it's almost impossible for people to build up a buffer, right? Oh no.
Right, an
No.
extra supply to, yeah,
Yeah.
get yourself off.
Yeah, can't have can't couldn't allow people to have a buffer system in that, right? So at any rate, you know, what do you do under that scenario? Well, by the way, it also lots of heartwarming stories of people who feel like they got their lives back finally, because even though you manage and you maintain with these things in your system, it's not you. You know, it's still a regulated system. So best always to just be who you're meant to be here to be, you
That's
know,
right.
with whatever your wiring is.
And PS, I just have to say before you move on to something else, you know, the majority of the world is medicating themselves with alcohol every day. So it's not like there are these crazy people that are on benzos and antidepressants and everyone else is fine. Like, no. Because alcohol, in my opinion, is just as bad. I think it's in the same family, right? It'll give you the same similar-ish like symptoms when you try to come off of it, right? Like it can kill you, just like
Sure, it's a depressant. We have here, Willow says, I'm in week three of quitting smoking, alcohol, sugar, weed. After
Ooh.
37 years of abuse, I'm only edgy. That's it. Pills are different. The rest is in your head. Get control and stop being convinced it's hard. So congrats on that, Willow. Keep
Good for
going.
you.
That is awesome. And thanks again, Liquid Electrum. Yeah, he says thank you for this live stream. It's sucky, an important topic and warning. Bless you guys. Well, yeah, it's a really important topic and one that I think we need to go down. And
Yeah.
let me go here real quick, because there's one more piece to this, which is about SSRIs. so-called antidepressants, right? So we know that they've got these warnings now. Now finally, again, you know, they come with a black box warning. Finally, the agent, that's the strictest warning the FDA can put out. It's kind of like, use these things carefully and sparingly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they say here, while antidepressants are designed to decrease the symptoms of depression, they occasionally have the opposite effect and can increase suicidal thoughts and actions, especially in children and adolescents. Okay, and that warning, they updated it in 2007. This is after years and years and years of prescribing these things, right? So again, whatever the VAERS system was not picking up the signal for a long time. It took real advocacy by parents, distraught parents, of kids who'd committed suicide to really move the ball. And they did it grudgingly and slowly and only after like astonishingly overwhelming evidence, of course, right?
Yeah.
They say your clinical studies found no significant increase of suicidality among adults older than 24, but they did under 24, right? So, And as well, all patients who take SSRIs in purple in the bottom may experience side effects. Can I use that term? Side effects? Such as violent behavior, mania, or aggression, which can all lead to suicide. But whoa, back up. What's going on with that violent behavior and the aggression? And then when we think about all those terrifying school shootings that have happened, right? Lots of rumors. I haven't seen the actual case reports, but, you know, I've seen people claim that practically all of these people who committed these acts of extreme violence, right, were on these things.
Yeah, I heard that, right? Too.
Yeah. So, you know, that's a side effect, they call it, right? But if that side effect happens, there's lots of really horrifying stories from parents who said, you know, this is my son, my daughter, but typically my son, never had any problems whatsoever. Went on one of these SSRIs and, you know, had trouble adjusting to it. And 3 weeks later, like, has no memory of this, but, you know, found himself at school with a gun thinking, wanting to do violent things, until finally broke out of whatever that reverie was. Like, literally not in control. But they say, oh, you know what? These are rare. These are rare side effects. So, this is an article that said, by our calculations, 37 million Americans are on medications like these things, right? Sertraline, fluoxetine, all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they say here, some people do very well with the antidepressant drugs. Okay.
What does that mean?
How about some people who don't? Then what happens, right? So, but you know what? It's going to be like with, this is rare. Very rare. Well, what's rare? 1 in 1,000? Would you say, hey, if we gave this to 1,000 kids and one of them, you know, kind of went off the reservation violently and aggressively, was that acceptable? What if it was 1 in 10,000? Is it 1 in 100,000? Well, you know me, I ran the numbers. So if there's 37 million people, it means that if it's a 1 in 1,000 event, 37,000 individual traumatic cases of something bad go on in somebody's life, either suicide or violence, right?
Yikes.
Is that acceptable? If it is, do we get to talk about it? But we're not even talking about this stuff. Well, we are. But I mean, as a nation, it's just like, oh yeah, you know, you just go and you get on these things, everybody's on them. And then we don't talk about what happens when, or what to even watch out for. Like, that ought to come with it. Your doctor ought to sit you down and say, you know what? Most of the time, this is okay, but you're going to need to watch out for these symptoms. And if these happen, bring your son or daughter back instantly, right?
Right.
We'll wean them off of these things right away.
Or somebody, how often do people actually go in there with their family or loved ones? I mean, I couldn't, I was so glad you were here to help me. Mm-hmm. And I'm not done with this whole traumatic event, by the way. I've got like, A tiny bit left to go, and it's the end, and that's sometimes challenging. And I'm scared.
Sometimes the hardest
part.
To
be honest, I'm
scared. A lot of people say that the end is, anyway, maybe not.
But
we don't know.
But I couldn't have looked out for myself very easily from an objective stance. Like, you, thankfully, were able to be like, no, I can tell. Like, there are days that she can't even get out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's really sick. Like, this isn't her. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you've been able to witness that and help sort of look out for those symptoms. I just feel for all those people that don't have somebody like that in their life, or like you said, just don't know that it's even a consequence.
Well, I can't even imagine what this is like for I mean, you're on these things. It's never a good time to get off. You've had lots of support, but can you imagine being a single mom, three kids, right? There's no right time to begin that taper process and to basically potentially get taken out of the game for weeks or months on end, depending on how it goes, sometimes mm-hmm. a year, right? It's that we do this to ourselves, that we put people on these things and then have no support for them afterwards. We gaslight them.
Yeah.
You know, you're just not being tough enough. You're not like being a strong enough person here. You're all of that stuff. Or it's like what happens with a vaccine injured. We're just like, oh, must have been something else, right? Maddie DeGarry within 24 hours, like collapsing, and the doctors even weeks and months later trying to convince them that she had a functional disorder, meaning it was all in her head, right?
Yeah.
Her bowels shut down and had to be resected. That's a hell of a panic attack, right?
Yeah.
So at any rate, it's pretty gross, but that's just how it is. So, but
before you go on,
yeah,
I think in our culture, one of the things I've been trying to do to support myself through this, right, mm-hmm. is to work with, I have a really great guide who does somatic experiencing work. And she's been excellent at helping me.
For other people who may not know. Somatic experiencing?
It's essentially, it's a modality, a healing modality that works with working on a very basic level of your development with your nervous system specifically to go back in time and help you work through things that might be pre-verbal, non-verbal memories that get encoded in your nervous system, mm-hmm. right? In your fight or flight, or sometimes for some people it's shut down, right? They go mm-hmm. into they can't get up, they can't do things. Like anyhow, it's been incredible for me. But what I realized from doing this, and it's not necessarily a plug for that, although I think it's great, is that we try so hard to avoid our feelings. Mm-hmm. I just see it over and over again, including yeah. myself, right? I go into this session, I start to talk with this woman. She's excellent, but I find myself over here in story talking about things. And she's like, how about we just go in there for a minute, Evie? Like, how about we just feel for a second? I'm like, oh, right. And then I am learning how to be there beside myself in a much different way. And I swear to goodness, it's alchemical. Like when you're with an emotion and you have good support beside you, you know, or on the phone or whatever, you can go in and just be with that feeling, and alchemically it shifts. Like it doesn't stay what it was. And typically those places that we're all afraid to go to are not as terrifying as we think they're going to be. Almost always that's not true. And so I've just found it amazing to realize that although we, you know, I'm sure people on here watching could be like, yeah, but I've gone through trauma. Like I've had horrible trauma. I've had some of the worst stuff that I've gone through in my own life. And I'm proud to say that it's possible to get through that. Mm. And it's possible to find other ways to support yourself. And I know there are probably tons of people in the chat too who have been successful at overcoming some of these things.
Yeah, and we're raising a lot of this now too, because I live by the anecdotes. I've got all this macro view and I can show you lots of data, but I live for the anecdotes, and I'm collecting these from every quarter. These are for people I work with here at Peak Prosperity, from our friends, from, you know, just reading through on chat boards. The tensions are really high right now, and people are feeling a lot of stress, and often they don't exactly know where the stress is sourced from. So that's the rats in a cage. We're being shocked. We're all being shocked, but we don't quite know where the shocks are coming from, which is wildly stressful. So how do we deal with the stresses? This isn't about, hey, let's all like, you know, become completely clear and clean and vice-free and all of that other stuff. It's to understand how you fundamentally can gain control of your life back again so that you're in your most resilient possible position. And sometimes we all just need to check out a little bit, and that's fine. That's okay. We're not talking about that. This isn't a discussion of vices. This is a discussion of people who are dependent now on classes of drugs that A, might vanish rather traumatically. So there's that risk, but B, they're not meant to be chronic. You are not designed as a creature, as an organism, to need some sort of chemical constant input. 37 million Americans need to be on daily like chemical modification. Like, dude, something's wrong with your society then. Fix that, right? But this whole idea that humans couldn't, like, somehow we just weren't happy until pharma companies came along with their little happy pills. And now that fixed everything. I know they work for some people, but at the same time, they treat the symptom, not the cause, right?
Mm-hmm.
Invariably. And no, millions and tens of millions of us are not chemically imbalanced because we just suck at life that bad, or we're wired up wrong. That's not it,
mm-hmm.
right? Just not it. So there, I'm off my little soapbox here for a second.
I heard that it wasn't even an anomaly like that, that there is no such thing as a chemical imbalance that leads to depression. That's just BS.
It is. It is. In fact, there's some cultures that don't even have a word for depression, right? Some of the, you know, more Aboriginal don't have time for that, right? So, but let's for the moment, let's imagine that this data, okay, so we're putting 37 million people on these antidepressants, and the theory behind it is it's going to make people happier, right? And so we ought to see it in the data. Now, remember we did this for vitamin D and sunscreens. I did this for my subscribers, right? Remember, Evie? So, so we're like, oh, people have been using sunscreens for decades now, so therefore, the incidence of melanoma should be going down. Nope. Chart's just like trucking up, right? And so at some point you got to go, that's a bad theory. It did not work out. So what's the macro data for this? Well, the macro data for this is probably this. That doesn't look so good.
Not at all.
Something happened there right around the year 2000. There's this giant inflection upwards, mostly for males, but also for females. In total, that black line on top shows that there was just this big old, this is from Wikipedia, so, you know, take it for what it's worth. But yeah, that, like, it should be in the data, right? We should be, we're given tens of millions of these things. People ought to not be doing that quite as much. That line should go the other way.
Right.
So when do we sit down as a culture and go, that was a bad idea. Guess it's not working out quite like we thought.
Good question.
To me, that's why I like that's why we go to the data.
Well, it's probably not going to come from the top down, right? Like, it's not going to be something where the powers that be or our quote leaders aren't going to decide suddenly that they give a crap about us and that they want to make sure everyone's okay or that treatment worked out well, right? We're going to have to self-advocate here.
Yeah.
Like, nobody's going to do it except we can do it for each other in our smaller communities, right?
Yep.
And that's part of what we do at Peak Prosperity, too, is we have discussions like this.
Yeah. All right. We're going to be moving on to this part two, which is about the Durham Report. But quickly, some things here. Browse DeWeb said, I have a family member who takes Xanax for anxiety, but we found out that hyperthyroidism was the root cause. You mentioned that, right?
I know. I don't know that for sure.
Don't know that to be, but I mean, yes, it's a thing. Sometimes that's the reason there.
I heard 50% of people that have anxiety are misdiagnosed. They actually potentially have thyroid issues.
Thyroid issues. So yeah, worth checking out all of the pieces there.
I'm going to go to a functional medicine person too, I think. Get some more data.
Sure. Good idea.
Yeah.
All right, so we are now going to switch to topics entirely, but thanks very much for being here for this part of this one. And by the way, we'll
read the comments. We will.
And by the way, these are the kinds of things we talk about at Peak Prosperity all the time. We've got a fantastic tribe of people over there, just like these comments here. So if you find yourself wanting to hang out with people who, well, we just use common sense and say things like, shouldn't that chart be going the other direction, right? Basic stuff. So we have basic conversations that honestly we need more and more of them these days because half the world is completely insane at this stage. And that's fine. They can continue to be nuts if they want, but I prefer to be around non-nuts folks. So come on by Peak Prosperity if you want to hang out with, Evie, myself, and all the great people there. So let's turn now to this, the Durham Report. You haven't really been following this, have you, Evie?
Not as much as you, perhaps. I don't think.
All right. Well, I mean, I can't.
Yeah, I missed it a few days ago.
I've read as much. This is the Office of Special Counsel. This just came out on the Department of Justice website very recently. This is a special report by John Durham. And it's a report on matters related to intelligence activities and investigations arising out of the 2016 presidential campaigns. This thing is a horror show. That speaks to the fact that we had full treason on display, that the deep state and the media were absolutely a very real thing. And this is horrifying to me. This is the most profound revelation of official malfeasance since the Church Commission back, you know, explaining what the CIA was up to. And unfortunately, I don't think they went far enough in dismantling things, but this is astonishing. This is, all right. I know this is kind of a very right-wing, considered a right-wing cat turd over there, cat turd too on Twitter, but I agree with this sentiment 100%. You can see with that red, because that's red, I liked this, gave that a click over on Twitter. It says, the Durham report proved the FBI, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, and Barack Obama framed President Trump to win an election and destroy his first term after he won. If this isn't treason, nothing is. I'll go further. It also showed the degree to which the mainstream media was 100% in on this whole thing and not only failed to do its job, but gave themselves awards for doing their job so poorly, called the Pulitzer. But look at that in just a second. But treason, you know, people use this treason thing all the time, Evie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they just bandied about. So let's go there. I like my definitions. Treason, noun, the crime of betraying one's country, especially by attempting to kill the sovereign or overthrow the government. Let's find out.
Sounds applicable.
If this actually applies in this particular case. And it does apply. Okay. So this is the report. Of course, you know me, I like to go to the core report itself. So I found this. This is from the executive summary on the front. This is from page 8 of the Durham report. And our findings, he says here, and conclusions regarding these and related questions are sobering. What does he say here? Well, so this is the state of the intelligence community information regarding Trump and Russia prior to the opening of this thing called Crossfire Hurricane, which was this big giant thing they opened up. This giant, they like to name their,
Oh, they do. That's what it was. It was like
Crossfire Hurricane. Yeah. So they name their investigations. Like, this was big enough that they named it Crossfire Hurricane. So this is like, what did they know before they opened that? Cause typically to open an investigation is a big deal. You're going to commit a lot of resources. Things are going to happen. Right. And so, you have to have a lot of probable cause in equivalent, right? You have to have good solid data to really open a big giant thing, because it's going to cost tons of resources. But this is
right
into a presidential candidate, so you would think the bar, that's got to be really high,
right? Yeah,
because that's a Rubicon. When you cross it, very hard to reel that one back. So you would think the highest possible standards would apply. Well, quote, as set forth in greater detail in section 4A.3.B, before the initial receipt by FBI headquarters of information from Australia on July 28, 2016, these dates are going to matter, July 28, 2016, concerning comments reportedly made in a tavern on May 6, 2016 by George Papadopoulos, an unpaid foreign policy advisor to the Trump campaign, the government possessed no verified intelligence reflecting that Trump or the Trump campaign was involved in a conspiracy or collaborative relationship with officials of the Russian government. Excuse me? No verified intelligence. So this is actually comments reportedly made in a tavern. So we're in a bar, and somebody who's not even a paid advisor, he's just a dude that Trump knows, allegedly says some stuff, and that was all they had to go on to initiate Operation Crossfire Hurricane, right?
Their names.
I know.
They gotta get better at that.
I know. Indeed, carrying on, based on the evidence gathered in the multiple exhaustive and costly federal investigations of these matters, including the instant investigation, neither U.S. law enforcement nor the intelligence community appears to have possessed any actual evidence of collusion in their holdings at the commencement of the Crossfire Hurricane investigation. So can you imagine, right?
Wow.
So this is like imagine that you're like you're just minding your own business and a DA suddenly hauled you into this big, giant, awful grand jury proceedings, right? And they did that on the basis of having zero information, but they're going to see if they can find any once they pull you into these proceedings, right?
Oh,
can you imagine being brought to trial? There's no evidence, but they're pretty sure they'll be able to surface some while you're on the stand, et cetera. This does not happen.
With discovery, were they hoping to go through discovery?
You do not open something like Crossfire Hurricane with no intel. They had nothing. That's what he says right in the front. like there it is in black and white. Neither U.S. law enforcement nor the intelligence community, right? So it was neither of them. Neither the FBI nor the CIA nor anybody, you know,
mm-hmm.
right? They had nothing. Indeed, based on all this stuff, right? They had nothing. Come on, this is insane.
And that's our tax dollars going to fund that crazy.
Well, yeah, a lot of tax dollars.
Crazy thing. Not that that's the only problem with the issue, but.
All right, that's pretty bad, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, it gets way worse. Yeah. Let's carry on.
Oh,
it gets way worse. I'm going to laugh. This is so bad. This is, people, this is the biggest thing that's happened. This is way bigger than Watergate. This is way bigger than even lying to get into a war of, well, maybe not, you know, lying about weapons of mass destruction, killing a million Iraqis. Now, that was bad. That was pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty bad.
Or whatever the thing is with Ukraine that we end up finding out.
Yeah, or the Ukraine stuff. That's
bad.
That's bad. But this is bad. This is bad. So anyway. So the opening of Crossfire Hurricane here, this is from page 9 of the Durham Report here. I've put the link in here somewhere. You can follow it yourself. Read it for yourself. As set forth in greater detail in Section 4, the record in this matter reflects that upon receipt of unevaluated intelligence information, that's like doctors speak for, he had a suboptimal functioning of the cardiac muscle. Oh, you mean died? Right? You know? The receipt of unevaluated intelligence information from Australia, the FBI swiftly opened the Crossfire Hurricane investigation in particular. At the direction of Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, Deputy Assistant Director for Counterintelligence Peter Strzok opened Crossfire Hurricane immediately, and Strzok, at a minimum, had pronounced hostile feelings towards Trump. That's a no-no. You absolutely cannot have a politically motivated witch hunt. You can't allow that to even... It's not the reality of it. You can't even allow the appearance of that. You just can't. That is a giant no-no.
Yeah, that is a foul.
In legal terms, yeah, it's a giant no-no, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's like when the police conduct a no-knock raid on the home of the person they suspect is having an affair with his wife. It's a no-no. It's a no-no. It's just not how it's supposed to go.
Just don't do it.
All right. In green, the matter was opened as a full investigation without ever having spoken to the persons who provided the information.
What?
I got you on that one, right? The matter was opened immediately, instantly, by a dude with hostile feelings for Trump as a full investigation without ever having spoken to the persons who provided the information. Dude, this is banana republic. This is really bad.
It is.
It's
embarrassing again.
This is really bad. I mean, it's really, there it is in black and white. This is really bad. Okay. Carrying on further, the FBI did so without one, any significant review of its own intelligence databases. Well, why would we look into our own? We're good. Let's just open.
We're up on current events.
Why would we look into our own databases? Two, without collection and examination of any relevant intelligence information from other U.S. entities, intelligence entities. Three, without any interviews of witnesses essential to understand the raw information it had received. Or four, without using any of the standard analytical tools typically employed by the FBI and non-insane human beings for evaluating raw intelligence. that part in green, it's just like, oh my God, this is so bad. Like, how do you even, and the FBI's response to this right now, Evie, mm-hmm. is they're like, well, we might have made a couple mistakes, but we've reviewed policies and we've adjusted them. Like, we're good, right?
We've evaluated ourselves.
We've
found that we're awesome.
Oh, it's bad.
So this just came out, this report?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just this week. In red, underlined there, had it done so, any of those four things, again, as set out, the FBI would have learned that their own experienced Russia analysts had no information about Trump being involved with Russian leadership officials, nor were others in sensitive positions at the CIA, the NSA, Department of State, aware of such evidence concerning the subject. So they had no date. They had nothing to go on. They didn't call anybody. They didn't look into their own databases. They didn't ask any questions. They didn't even talk to the people who allegedly this information came from. Opened it right up. Right? Okay. Carrying on. In addition, FBI records prepared by Strzok in February and March 2017 show that at the time of the opening of Crossfire Hurricane, the FBI had no information in its holdings indicating that at any time during the campaign, anyone in the Trump campaign had been in contact with any Russian intelligence officials.
Hey, those are important words there.
You think?
None, no, nope. Any.
None, no, any, yeah.
Like the, you know, mm-hmm. You got to be pretty certain about your facts in order to say something like that.
I know. And this is just the opening. This is just the opening of it, right? It gets way worse, okay? It gets worse and worse and worse, right? So again, up there in yellow, though, it says Strzok at a minimum had pronounced hostile feelings towards Trump. At the time, he's Deputy Assistant Director for Counterintelligence, this guy Peter Strzok, right? Turns out he's also having an affair with a lady, Lisa Page, who is a Department of Justice lawyer at the time.
Oh, no.
So if you want to say the FBI was in bed with the DOJ, that was literally true in the case of these two, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. And by the way, here they are having a text conversation that got pried out. Lisa, in August of 2016, she wrote, Trump's not ever going to become president, right? Right? Peter Strzok, no, he won't. We'll stop it. And there he is giving Senate testimony there. Happy looking at. We'll stop it. The FBI, full stop, opens an illegitimate investigation with the sole purpose of derailing the presidential campaign and then later the active presidency of a U.S. president. Nothing this bad has ever happened that's come to light. This is treason. Full stop. Now, the interesting part about this all is that there's a sizable number of people who want to just forget about it and pretend to move on and, like, we're good, right?
Yeah, I didn't hear anything in the mainstream media.
Well, the mainstream media is going to be really not, they're going to do everything they can to avoid this for as long as possible because they are up to their eyeballs in this. They didn't just sort of miss this. They whooped this up mm-hmm. for years because bad orange man, right? That's why.
I know.
You know?
I know.
Okay, this is really astonishing.
Russia.
All right. Carrying on. So this is from a little bit further down and in the Durham report again. Writing, they said here, quote, the speed and manner in which the FBI opened and investigated Crossfire Hurricane during the presidential election season based on raw, unanalyzed, and uncorroborated intelligence, use that word loosely, also reflected a noticeable departure from how it approached prior matters involving possible attempted foreign election interference plans aimed at the Clinton campaign.
Ooh. Ooh. Oh, it does get worse.
Ooh.
Rules for thee, but not for me.
As described in Section 4B in the 18 months leading up to the 2016 election, 18 months, the FBI was required to deal with a number of proposed investigations that had the potential of affecting the election. In each of those instances, the FBI moved with considerable caution. In one such matter, discussed in Section 4B.1, FBI headquarters and department officials required defensive briefings to be provided to Clinton and other officials or candidates who appeared to be the targets of foreign interference. In another, the FBI elected to end an investigation after one of its longtime invaluable CHSs went beyond what was authorized and made an improper move, right? So remember, there was all this stuff about servers and emails, and they just like, they went slowly and they never really filed charges.
I remember that.
Nothing actually happened. But that was when it came to the Clintons, right? But when it came to Trump, opened that whole thing right up and off they went, right? So obviously this violates not just the spirit of or the appearance of, but the reality of impartiality has been just thrown right out the window in a highly political fashion by somebody with a known dislike of Trump. So as bad as that was, you know, the worst thing about this for me, Evie, is when these sorts of people are caught, they double down. They just double down.
Right.
They
jade.
They justify, argue, defend, explain. That's jade, J-A-D-E. But they just push forward. So you want to talk about pushing forward? Remember this? Pepperidge Farm remembers. Remember this?
Yeah.
This was just last summer, right?
That wasn't very long
August
ago.
August 22, right? Remember this? The FBI, the extraordinary move to search the home of a former president. Like, and did anything come of that? Again, it was a fishing expedition. It was just an attempt. So. Like, the FBI is just like, hey, maybe if we raid this guy's house, we'll find something.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They broke it. They broke into his safes. They took his passports. They grabbed all kinds of documents. There was all this hoopla. The media was beside itself. Oh my God, this is amazing that, you know, finally Trump's going to go down. That. And then what happened?
Nothing.
Nothing. Bupkis.
Nothing.
Right?
Yep.
Bupkis. So get this. So, RFK Jr., who I like a lot, and I like how he's coming on a lot of issues, from Bitcoin to pharma to you name it. He said, and if anybody should know, remember, so this is a guy whose uncle and father both came to untimely ends thanks to intelligence agencies in the U.S., dark forces. So if anybody's like got my attention on these sorts of things, this guy has all the, he gets a free pass. He gets to say whatever the heck he wants.
He can discuss it.
He can say whatever he wants.
Pine away, RFK.
Yeah, what do you have to say? He said, quote, about the Durham report, you have 50 top-level CIA agents who agreed to collaborate in a project to fix an election. He went on to say, and undermine a president in a presidency.
Yeah.
That's treason, folks. Full stop. That's the full-on definition.
Yep. No matter what you think of anybody that's involved.
And these people have names. You know me, I like names. I like naming names. Remember this? So these were all the intelligence experts who falsely discredited the Hunter Biden laptop story because that was Russian disinformation, right? Look at all these experts up here. Let's see who we got on here. Michael Hayden, Leon Panetta.
I've never heard
James
of some
Bruce,
of these people.
We got, this is just like, these are all like, this is the deep state. This is what they look like. This is them. These are the people who
Nadia
clearly
Bakos
were passing misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation, but actually harmful.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually harmful.
Yeah.
Misinformation. That's what, if you want to understand true, actual, harmful misinformation, those are the pictures of some of them right there. That was just about the Hunter Biden thing. So that's not directly connected to Operation Crossfire, but it's, of course, it's peripherally connected over time, right?
Of course.
All right. So you want to know how bad it is, though? You want to know how bad it is? It's so bad that, let me see. I got to get my,
trying to make it play.
Hold up. Hang on. I will figure this out. 1 second. I can't make the pen go away. It's just pen? No. Just go away. Arrow options. Why can't I just make it not be anything? Ah, here we go. You ready?
Yeah.
Look, trust in the FBI is eroding left and right. Feels like we're in the moment that we need a real church committee, that this is a moment like when the J. Edgar Hoover FBI clearly was no longer helping the American people. There was a moment. This feels like we might be in one of those moments.
What? Say that
Look,
again.
Look, trust in the FBI is eroding.
This is NBC. This is Meet the Press.
Left and right. Feels like we're in the moment that we need a real church committee, that this is a...
The church committee. Whoa. That was, you know, bipartisan committee in Congress to investigate the CIA for its malfeasance and hold it to account. By the time even NBC is busy saying, hey, trust in the FBI is eroding. No, it's not eroding, buddy. It is destroyed, right?
Gone.
It is gone, right? You know, my sense of the FBI at this point, I'm sure there's good agents out there, I guess, but, you know, as an institution, I might as well, it's like, I feel like I'm watching a, you know, Sopranos all over again. It's just a mob, right?
Yeah.
Yep. So this is really serious. This is, I don't want to just let this slide by. I know the media is going to do what it can to let it slide by, right? So this was in Newsweek, so I feel okay coming out with this. It just came out on the 19th of May. What's today? The 21st, right? So a couple days ago, Ben Weingarten, editor-at-large of Real Clear Investigations, wrote here in an opinion piece in Newsweek, said, quote, our ruling class will use any means necessary, no matter how lawless, vicious, or brazen, to preserve its power and privilege, and it will seemingly never pay a price for its corruption and criminality. So do you agree with that? If you're watching this, just let us know, like put it down in the chat window there or put it in the comments. Do you agree with that? Do you think they'll never pay a price for this corruption and criminality? You know, poll time. What do you think? Carrying on. And it will seemingly never, that is the ultimate lesson conveyed in more than 300 pages of gory details in the Republic eroding scandal that is Russiagate, comprising Special Counsel John Durham's final report. Russiagate's aim from the jump was to delegitimize, destabilize, and destroy Donald Trump's presidency, hatched by the Hillary Clinton campaign. This would be her revenge for losing to Trump, an attempt to make his victory a Pyrrhic one. This would be the deep state's way to sabotage and subvert a commander-in-chief who threatened to upend its agenda and that of the entire political establishment. Thoughts?
I don't have any thoughts. I'm just taking it in.
Do you think they'll ever be held to account?
I hope so. I would hope so. At this point, I feel like we're running out of people that could actually help hold their feet to the fire, right? The corruption is so bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's on every level in every part of government. I mean, where do you go to get rid of that kind of corruption?
I don't know, but if we don't have that accountability, if we don't finally get to accountability in this story,
mm-hmm.
all is lost. It's all lost, right? It's the reality and the appearance of the rule of law. They both actually matter importantly. It's that until we have some level of trust is the glue that makes it all possible. Like if somebody said, hey, you know, we're going to have to, put up wind towers everywhere because we have this whole green fantasy thing. Whole other story about that, by the way. You would have to have people trusting that wasn't just another corrupt sort of reason to steal your land and make all the gains go to somebody's brother-in-law who, you know, gave a campaign contribution. Like without trust, very little is possible. That's what's happening here. Our trust is just being destroyed, eviscerated, almost as if I could say editorially, it just feels it can't be unintentional. If you flip a coin, eventually it has to come up heads. This is just tail after tail after tail after tail, right? The CDC, the NIH, the NIAID, elections, FBI. I mean, it's just over and over again. Mm-hmm. It feels intentional mm-hmm. all of a sudden. Like this is what it looks like when you're under attack and somebody is destroying your country on purpose.
Right.
Because if it's not on purpose, these people are remarkably savant-like in their imbecility.
Exactly. Well, and don't forget that, you know, Title 42 that expired, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Has been causing issues in in this, you know, the border states, and nobody's really, I mean, I don't know if the mainstream media is talking about that, but that's another piece of that sort of taking the country apart, right?
Right. Well, Manga the Pawn says, we have to take your land because of nitrogen, right? Speaking to all the stuff that's going on out there in farming land, that's a whole other story. And then Robert Mills says, hate to tell you this, Chris, nothing will come of any of this. All is lost. I can't disagree with that at all. So my advice, our advice here is plant a garden, get to know your neighbors real well, don't have all your money in a bank, right? On and on and on, right? Mm-hmm. That's what we talk about at Peak Prosperity, because as we catalog and chronicle the decay, it's picking up speed. We have a model for that. This is what happens at the end of exponential systems. They speed up. Things go a little fast right towards the end. If you don't know what I'm talking about, be sure to watch the crash course about that, because it's a great model to help us understand where we're at. And that's what I do. I like framing things so that I can make sense of them more quickly, right? Whether that's rats in a cage, understanding demoralization, knowing what's going on with the Federal Reserve, understanding exponential functions. These all tie together and help us make sense of things when they really don't otherwise make sense. But welcome to the end of all kinds of things. We're at the end of, well, the dollar is a reserve currency, fading fast. These things in retrospect happen mighty quick. Right now it feels slow, but trust me, that's drip, drip, dripping away. The end of U.S. hegemony across the world, the unipolar world with the United States as the world's policeman. If you haven't been tracking what's going on in Ukraine, where the vaunted U.S. Patriot system got taken out, these things are all show that we're over the cusp of, we're past the zenith of U.S. power. Well, those vacuums are extraordinarily upsetting, disruptive times as we carry forward. So at any rate, let's look at this real quick, because I got one more piece here.
Yeah, what you got?
And we'll carry on. So this is still from that same Newsweek op-ed. I didn't put the link down below, but this relates to the prior slide, same one. So I love how he writes here, the parallels between the deep state and its media co-conspirators in foisting Trump-Russia collusion on America are striking. Deep state and its media co-conspirators. Mm-hmm. We got to look at both these things together, right? Both failed at their missions to expose the truth in defense of our republic, but self-evidently defined success differently. Both wanted to get Trump, with the deep state doing the investigating and corporate media serving as its communications arm. They got millions of Americans to believe the president was working with Russia, cast a pall over the entire presidency, and undermined it. While the deep state has brushed off its corruption as missteps and made reforms largely around edges to address it, the media has continued to downplay its own errors or even double down on its work. Durham's report stands as a direct indictment of the FBI and Justice Department and an indirect indictment of the media. No, not too indirect. It's a direct indictment of the media that carried the agency's water. But as with the former, the latter will not face indictments. No one responsible for printing stories filled with gaping errors in major publications has been disciplined, let alone fired. The deep state and media remain unchastened. The very agencies we can least afford to be hyper-politicized and weaponized remain hopelessly so, and the institution of journalism that might help expose them or hold them to account remains co-opted by them. We, the people, suffer. Well, I had to go there just to see. This is from the Pulitzer.org. Staffs of the New York Times, Washington Post. Won Pulitzers for deeply sourced, relentlessly reported coverage in the public interest that dramatically furthered the nation's understanding of Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election and its connections to the Trump campaign, the president-elect's transition team, and his eventual administration. And there they're all smiling. That's them. There they are. That's I name names and give you faces. There they are, handing out awards to themselves for doing absolutely hopelessly shoddy, deeply embarrassing, wildly corrupt, absolutely flawed, broken, wrong reporting. There they are.
Journalism.
There they are. Loser, 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 loser. Liar, liar, pants on fire. I mean, I'm really, I'm filled with contempt for these people.
That's okay.
I am filled with contempt for them.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. So, anywho, that's all I have to say about that.
Oh yeah.
No, it's true. It's, no, I got more, but you know.
What's up, Gump?
No, but seriously, so Evie, this is a big deal. I'm really interested. Like, how does that land on you? Because I know maybe this is some of the first time you've heard some of this, because we haven't been talking about these foibles all that much during our morning rant.
Yeah, no, not as much. I mean, I saw the whistleblower hearing.
Oh yeah, the FBI agent who had his life destroyed.
Yeah, that was really potent. I don't know who else was able to see that, but that actually touched me. I mean, that last closing argument, just talking about the cost of standing up for what you know is right, was so well articulated.
Mm-hmm.
It gave me chills. I didn't watch the whole like 3.5 hour thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just watched bits and pieces. But
yeah,
if we have any hope, it's that people will come forward, right? It's that people will come forward in reporting and quote journalism as well and say, no, you know, they made me do this, or they wouldn't let me say X or whatever. You know, we have people that come forward, hopefully in every arena, that can help us correct the course we're on. Otherwise, mm-hmm. I agree with you. I don't think there's a lot of hope, but I mean, I know that those people out there affect our future somehow. Of course they do.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have already taken them out of my realm of folks that I trust to do any good whatsoever. And I've taken that into my own hands. I have to take my sovereignty into my own hands. And I think that's what makes me feel better at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I'm not waiting and wondering for somebody else to fix it. Like, I'm preparing myself for the eventuality that I may have to defend us from them. Like, I hope it doesn't come to that, but I know that could be true.
But it feels that way, doesn't it? Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly does.
I want to find unity, you know? It's one of the things that I do like about RFK Jr. He it looks like he could possibly unite us again, right? Mm-hmm. Biden, deeply divisive. Well, it's not Biden. He's mentally defective. But, I mean, his handlers, mm-hmm. whoever's running the show back there, which, by the way, I don't have any faith that it isn't just some continuation of Barack Obama's administration, right? Because all the same cast of characters are in there. That Hillary Clinton isn't. There's a cast in there, and they don't care about right from wrong, as far as I can tell. You know, their policies have been uniquely disastrous, and I think they ought to be held to account for that at some point in time. But these are the people, and again, there could be crossover. This doesn't have to be left right, but there's a crew of people in D.C. who think somehow it's a really swell idea to tangle up with a nuclear superpower. And none of us get to talk about it or vote on it. And I think it's a horribly bad mm-hmm. idea with exceptional tail risk of major catastrophe and almost no benefit, mm-hmm. right? There's really mm-hmm. nothing good that can come out of that. What could come out of that? Some extra wheat exports at some point in time?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe another place to park a president's, future ex-president's son on a nameless board, right?
Yeah.
Or whatever. I mean, it's just gross, right? So we're caught up in this cycle of like massive corruption. It's so entrenched that the people who are operating it can't even see it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'll bet you there's people inside the FBI running that deeply corrupt treasonous action, right? Operation Crossfire Hurricane, who saw nothing wrong with it and still don't. They look at that and go, no, that was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It was so important. I saved the Republic. The bad orange man was so bad. All the means were justified by the ends.
Do you think that because, I don't know, this is just sort of an open-ended question, but mm-hmm. I feel that teamness that, like, I will do whatever I have to do to win. You know, I want the W. I don't care what I do or hurt who I hurt in the mm-hmm. meantime.
Yep.
Do you think that's unique to the United States in that, like, we're big on team sports in this country? Like, we're pushed into it more than anything, and on some level, we're taught to sort of go at each other like that.
Yeah, sure. In the sense that it's like a super shallow way of going about stuff, right? Because we don't have any other enduring rituals, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like crazy if you watch like, you know, Germany has these Oktoberfests, and then they've got this weird thing in the Netherlands, the Sinterklaas, and, you know, there's like, they still have traditions, right? What do we got?
We're like, here's some plastic eggs. We got Halloween. You can fill with crap.
We got the plastic egg day, and then we got the Super Bowl. You know,
yeah.
It's like it's been stripped away. Our prime rituals have been decoupled from the things they were supposed to represent. So they've become
mm-hmm.
sort of veneers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, yeah, it's the reason I left and didn't want to work at, even though I think I would have been an incredibly good professor. much like Peter Boghossian or Jordan Peterson or any of these other people who didn't quite make the cut inside universities, because universities don't really care how good of a teacher you are. They care about politics, and their politics are so small and are so meaningless that they're actually vicious and brutal, right? So I think that's how I understand what you're talking about, is that the things that we've turned into these vicious, brutal sports are actually meaningless. That, like, we're really arguing over almost nothing while big things aren't happening. Students aren't being educated. The country is not getting stronger. It's being weakened, right? But meanwhile, the vicious politics. Yeah, carries on.
And because of that, you know, all the things that happen in those, in between the lines, are just sort of nobody's problem, right?
So Sail Away says, USA is a very extroverted society, needs external validation, right? Well, we just did that whole thing where we talked about narcissism and that whole dynamic. And then as well, we talked about the left and versus right, but how the brains are wired very differently. And one sort of comes from the core outward and one starts from the outward in.
Right.
But when you care about ideology from the outward in, it doesn't connect and ground well.
Right. It doesn't have a landing spot.
Doesn't have a landing spot and all of that. So, well, with that, we are at the end of our time here today. So, hey, thanks everybody for being here with us on a Sunday. I know
it's
Evie's
great to be back.
You
again.
Always usually have some awesome way of closing us. Do you have something for us today?
Not at the moment.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, I don't.
Oh.
I wanted to say, if people have pieces of writing that they really love, like any, you know, poems or fantastic writing that has inspired you, I would love to hear about it. And then I would be happy to share other people's picks on here, because I've run out of, I've cycled through all my favorites, I think, enough. At least at the other webinars that we do back at Peak Prosperity. So,
all right, keep talking. I'm going to see if I can find this one thing to close us then.
So you could leave it in the chat and or in the conversation down below in the show notes, below those, and I will check that out and make note of that. But yeah, it's good to be back. We were away, so we didn't do the last live cast last Sunday. So hope everybody had a happy Mother's Day too.
All right. So
speaking of
Hallmark
holidays.
Yeah. So I have a piece from Bo Burnham here. I remember just came across this and I love this. So you wanna read this?
Sure.
It starts with this feeling right there. So this is from a special, I think he was Inside Take or something like that. Anyway, this is an awesome little quote. He speaks, I think, to a lot of people of his generation. He just turned 30 recently. So, yeah, what do you got?
So start at this feeling? Okay. This feeling, this steady, formless feeling that hangs over everything, this untamable, aimless urgency, this sense that all of this is going to burst at any moment. It just has to. It can't sustain like this, not with this much speed, not with this much force. The fear of what will happen when it ends, when it hits the brick wall, and the other fear, the deeper fear, the unspeakable fear of never hitting the wall, of this feeling never ending, never slowing down, but rising forever like a shepherd's tone, an endless and pointless climb towards a terrible and dense nothing.
He's speaking of experience within social media. It's just this pointless urgency to the whole thing, but that it can't stop. It's just, it's building. So, things are building, but, hey, come by Peak Prosperity. If you want to join the community there, we'd love to have you. Why? Well, because you need information, you got to take action, and you have to surround yourself with the people who are also sharing that point of view, because you are the average of the people you spend time around. So spend them with good folks. Thanks very much for being here today. We'll see you next time. I hope you enjoyed this. Leave comments. Remember to hit like, all those things. With that, thanks very much. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.